This is The Litter of Bones, a DCI Jack Logan thriller. Written by J.D. Kirk and produced by Be Here. Episode 1. The total collapse of Duncan Reed's life began with a gate in the arse end of nowhere. There was a trick to opening this particular gate, Duncan knew. The arm of the metal slider had been buckled for years, and if you tried hauling it in the direction the bend suggested it should go, you were doomed to failure. The trick was to twist and jiggle, creaking the slider loose of its mooring, allowing the whole thing to eventually swing free. Or, if you were a 7-year-old with more energy than sense, you could clamber up the metal spars, jump down, and stand triumphantly on the other side waiting for your dad to get a move on.
I won!
Cheered Connor. He broke into a little dance. The floss, he called it. All the rage, apparently. Down at Duncan's feet, their golden retriever wriggled impatiently, the entirety of her copper-coloured back end wagging, her front feet pawing at the ground with barely contained excitement.
All right, Meg, give us a minute,
Duncan told the animal. The slider clunked free. The gate had barely swung 6 inches towards him when Meg nosed it open and squeezed through. Connor dodged aside as the dog went hearing past it. She bulleted ahead, running for no other reason than the sheer unbridled joy of being out of the car and off the lead.
Someone's in a hurry.
They watched as she detoured off into the trees that lined the track on the right, quickly vanishing from sight beneath the moss-covered trunks.
Meg, come back!
She'll be fine.
He pulled the gate closed behind them, wiggling the slider just enough to jam it shut, but not so far that he'd have to go through the whole process again when they left.
She's been exploring round here since before you were born.
Connor didn't look convinced, but fell into step beside his dad as they set off along the track. Living up here, they were spoiled for choice when it came to dog walking routes. Granted, it was pretty much the only thing they were spoiled for choice for, but it was something. But of all the routes available to them, this one stood out as a favourite. The only downside was getting to it. The drive along the main Fort William to Spinbridge Road could be a nightmare in the summer. At this time of year, though, before the camper vans piloted by overly cautious tourists had started to clog everything up, it flew by. After that, it was just to turn up the Leinochen Forest Road, a mile or so along a single-track lane, with the fingers crossed that no one was coming the other way, and then the usual wrestling match with the gate. And then, bliss. Miles of forestry track, cracking views, and rarely another living soul in sight. In all the years that Duncan had been making the same walk, he'd met maybe 20 walkers, half a dozen cyclists, and one guy on stilts. That one had caught him off guard, and had sent Meg into a frenzy of panic barking. It was a sponsored hike for charity, it turned out. Cancer or something. Duncan had been too busy trying to get a hold of the dog and quieten her down to really pay too much attention. Once he'd got her by the collar, he chucked a couple of quid into the collection tin and kept hold of Meg until the guy had teetered off around the corner, out of sight. Today was looking like it'd be free of interruptions, and Duncan felt physically lighter as he let himself relax. Meg was a good dog, for the most part, but didn't handle strangers well, so the lack of life signs always came as a relief. Sure, someone might come around one of the bends further down the track and set her off, but that was a problem for later. For now, the coast was clear. Far off on the left, across a graveyard of tree stumps, the A82 curved ahead to the Commando Memorial and onwards to Inverness. An irregular stream of traffic meandered up it, paintwork glinting in the uncharacteristically bright April sunshine. At this distance, the traffic was whisper quiet. The only sounds to be heard were the chirping of the birds and the faint crunch of the stony ground beneath Duncan's boots. Up ahead, Meg exploded from within a crop of trees, ploughed through a mud puddle that painted her brown from halfway down her legs, then stopped in the middle of the path. She watched them for a while, tongue hanging out and chest heaving as she checked that they were still headed in the same direction. When she was sure they weren't about to turn around and head for the car, she returned to the trees, getting back to whatever business she'd left unattended in there.
"See? Told you she'd be fine,"
Duncan said, giving his son a playful nudge.
"Filthy, I'll give you, but fine."
"Did you see how much mud's on her?"
"I did."
"She's covered."
"She is. And guess who's cleaning her up when we get him?"
Connor grinned up at him.
"You."
"Me? No way. You."
"Nuh-uh."
"Yuh-huh. I'll give you a scrubbing brush and a bucket."
He gave a little gasp as an idea hit him.
"Oh, you can do the car when you're at it. Two birds with one stone."
Connor shook his head emphatically.
"Fine. You can hold her while I hose her down."
Connor had no real objection to that, but it had become a game now, and so he continued to resist.
"Nope."
Duncan stroked his chin, his finger and thumb rasping against the stubble.
"Okay, she can hold you and I'll hose you down."
He made a sound like scooshing water.
"Shh."
I mimed blasting the boy with it.
"How about that?"
"I had a bath this morning."
"You did? Good. Is it April already?"
Duncan teased. Connor didn't quite get the dig, but giggled again regardless. They walked on for several minutes, rounding the gentle curve of the track, passing the little quarry on the left-hand side, where two diggers had sat mostly motionless for the past year or so. Rarely, when Duncan came up this way, they'd have moved a few feet, or the angle of the buckets would have shifted. He'd never seen any sign of anyone sat behind the controls, though, much less doing any actual digging. It had been a while since Connor had said anything, and although Duncan was enjoying the peace and quiet, it wasn't normal. Friday was swimming day at school, and the boy would normally be full of stories about who was proving to be the best at backstroke and which of his classmates had come closest to drowning. Today, though, he'd barely spoken a word that Duncan hadn't teased out of him first.
"You're right, Con."
"Yeah, fine,"
Connor said, not looking up. He had found a stick that was almost the height of himself and was walking with it like a wizard with a staff.
"If Meg sees you with that, she'll be away with it."
Connor nodded, but said nothing.
"How was swimming?"
"Good."
"Everyone survive?"
"Yep."
They continued on in silence for a while longer. A bird of prey circled in the air above them. A buzzard, Duncan guessed, although he had no idea. It might have been an eagle. It could have been a big pigeon. He'd lived his life in the Highlands, but the particulars of its wildlife were lost in him. Similarly, the trees lining the tracks beside him. He had no idea what those were either. Pine? Maybe. Beech? Very possibly. Oak? He didn't think so. But he had no idea what he was basing that on. They were trees. That was about as specific as he could get.
"Dad,"
Connor said after a few more steps. His eyes were still fixed on the ground, his voice quiet.
"You know Ed?"
Duncan ran through his mental checklist of the kids in Connor's class. He couldn't place an Ed.
"Which one is he? The one with the orange mum?"
Connor glanced up at him, brow furrowed in confusion.
"Next door, Ed."
"Oh, next door, Ed. Yes, yeah, sorry. I thought you meant someone in your class."
"There's no one in my class called Ed."
"No, I know. I was..."
Duncan gave his head a little shake.
"Next door, Ed, aye. What about him?"
Connor seemed to wrestle briefly with his next question.
"Do you like him?"
Duncan puffed out his cheeks.
"Do I like him? Next door Ed? Suppose, I mean. I don't really know him. He seems nice enough. I think he's settling in all right. Why?"
Connor tapped the ground with the bottom of his stick as they walked, drumming out a little beat.
"Does Mum like him?"
Duncan stopped.
"I don't know. Why? What makes you ask that?"
Connor walked on a few paces. Then he stopped too. He stood there, chewing his lip, twisting the staff in his hand.
Nothing, I was just wondering.
Duncan cocked his head a little, regarding his son quizzically.
That's a weird thing to just start wondering.
Connor's cheeks blushed red.
Gone?
Where's Meg?
His eyes darting to the tree line.
She's in there. She'll be fine.
Shooting the forest the most fleeting of glances.
She'll come back when we call her. Why were you asking about...
Meg! Meg, where are you?
He put his fingers in his mouth and attempted a whistle. All he managed was a blast of damp-sounding air. Duncan sighed, then formed a C-shape with thumb and forefinger and jammed them in his mouth. His whistle was shrill and loud. It cut off the birdsong, instantly reducing it to an indignant sort of silence.
Where is she?
Connor asked, scanning the trees.
Why isn't she coming back?
She'll be fine,
Duncan assured him. But he gave another whistle and followed with a shout.
Meg! Come on, Meg!
Nothing moved in the trees. The canopy of leaves and branches cast the undergrowth into a gloomy darkness. There was still an hour or so until sunset, but the shadows were growing longer, and the breeze had gained a chillier edge.
Stupid bloody dog!
What if she's hurt? What if something happened to her?
Nothing will have happened to her. She's probably just rolling in something. You know what she's like.
Duncan cupped his hands around his mouth and called the dog's name again.
Meg! Meg!
He shouted, stretching it across two syllables. They waited. The trees creaked. The wind whispered through the grass. But beyond that, nothing.
Bugger it,
Duncan muttered.
Dad?
Said Connor, his eyes wide with alarm.
Why is she not coming?
She'll be fine. She's always fine. But I'll go in and look for her if it makes you feel better. Stay here and shout me when she comes back.
Connor glanced both ways along the empty track, then nodded.
But what if she doesn't?
She'll be back.
But what if she's not?
She will.
But...
I won't stop looking, all right?
Said Duncan, a little irritably. He forced a smile.
She'll be fine. She's just being a pain. You wait here.
Connor nodded again.
Okay, I'll wait here.
Good lad. And shout when she comes out. Nice and loud, all right?
I will, Dad.
Duncan clapped a hand on the boy's shoulder.
And don't worry. We'll get her. She won't have gone far. Bastard.
Duncan hissed, clutching his cheek where a thin branch had whipped at him. There was no blood, but he could feel a welt forming, raising a thin red line across his skin. The ground was moist and spongy beneath his feet, and a dampness crept up the legs of his jeans, sticking them, cold and clammy, to the tops of his ankles.
Any sign, Con?
He called over his shoulder.
Not yet.
His son shouted back, his voice muffled by the surrounding woodland. Duncan cursed the dog a few times, then just cursed in general as he trudged onwards, his boots snagging in the undergrowth, the branches determined to have one of his eyes out. Half a dozen shambling steps later, something moved suddenly on his right, rustling through the tangle of grasses. He turned, startled, almost losing his balance as he searched for the source of the sound. A rabbit appeared briefly from a knot of weeds, realised its mistake, then vanished again just as quickly. Duncan didn't see it again, but heard it scamper off to some hiding place deeper into the forest.
Bloody thing,
he grumbled, listening to the fading swish of the rabbit through the grass. He was only a couple of minutes' walk into the trees, but light was already in short supply. Everything was painted in a gloominess that turned the shadows to pools of black and tinted everything else in shades of grey and blue.
You got her, Connor!
Duncan shouted. He waited for a response from his son.
Connor!
He called again, when no answer came.
You got Meg yet?
Nothing.
Gone?
The trees groaned around him. The breeze murmured through the undergrowth. Everything else had fallen silent. Looking back, Duncan wouldn't be able to say for sure why he ran. Not really. There was nothing to suggest anything had happened. No one thing he could pinpoint as the reason for his sudden panic. Realistically, Connor simply hadn't heard him. That was all. It wasn't unusual for the boy to get distracted. His selective deafness was an ongoing family joke. And yet Duncan ran. He ran, fueled by fear, pushing his way through the grasping undergrowth and the whipping branches, splashing through the soggy dips and stumbling over the moss-covered rocks, something hot and urgent gnawing away at his insides.
Connor!
He hurtled out of the trees, slipped on an unexpected embankment, and slid down it on his arse. The puddle of mud at the bottom cushioned his fall, then slopped forlornly as it lost its grip on him when he pulled himself free.
Con! Connor!
He'd emerged from the forest 30 feet or so from where he'd first entered it. He had a clear view of the spot where he'd told Connor to wait, but hurried over to it anyway, in case he was somehow overlooking something. In case he was somehow overlooking his son. Where the boy had been was a long, crooked stick lying on the ground. A staff, abandoned by its wizard.
Connor!
Connor!
Duncan bellowed. His voice echoed in both directions along the empty track, up into the forest, off across the graveyard of stumps, and on towards the distant road.
Connor! Where are you? Gone!
And then from behind him came the sound of movement. He sobbed, relief flooding him, lightening his head, slackening muscles he hadn't felt go tight.
Connor, I thought I told you to...
He stopped when a muddy golden retriever padded out of the trees, tail wagging, tongue lolling happily. Something deep in Duncan's gut twisted into a knot. He spiraled around, searching for his son.
Connor! Con, where are you?
No answer came. Meg crept to Duncan's side, her head low, sensing his distress.
This is your fault, stupid bloody dog!
Meg lowered her head, her eyes gazing uncomprehendingly up at him. Duncan's voice softened. It took on a pleading edge.
Go find him. Go find Connor.
His fingers fumbled for the phone in his pocket as he stared at the dog, willing her to listen, willing her to understand. He thumbed the phone awake. No signal. No fucking signal. Duncan shot the dog a desperate, hopeless look. His voice cracked.
Go find her, boy.
Detective Chief Inspector Jack Logan waited for the door to buzz open, then continued through it and along another of the stark, unwelcoming corridors of Carstairs State Hospital. He turned left at the bottom, through another set of doors, then up the wide staircase to the next floor. He could have taken the lift, but the stairs were usually quicker. Besides, you never knew who you might end up sharing the lift with, and what they might try to get up to in the confined space. His feet led him through the hospital on autopilot, having made this journey too many times to count. There were plenty of places Logan wished he knew like the back of his hand. Venice, the south of France, the Bahamas maybe? But no. Instead, the place on Earth he was probably most familiar with was a maximum security psychiatric hospital in South Lanarkshire, poaching with rapists, murderers, and all manner of worse. Once upon a time, he would have struggled to believe the and worse part. But 20 years on the job had soon leathered any such doubts out of him. The beat days had been bad enough, giving him a wee taster menu of the sort of horrors he'd eventually be forced to gorge himself on. It had gone from bad to worse when he'd moved up to CID. And since transferring to the major investigations team, he'd seen things that would make the average murdering rapist shake their heads in disgust. Another door blocked his path, its two double-glazed square windows each encasing a mesh of thick wire. He stopped and fixed the camera mounted above it with an impatient look. Logan caught sight of himself in the camera's wide lens, and made a half-hearted attempt at smoothing down his hair. He ran a hand across his chin, as if he could wipe away the stubble that had been shading in his jawline for the past few days. He had the look of someone who had been destined to find himself involved with the law, although not necessarily on the side he'd ended up on. He was tall and broad, but generally held himself a little stooped, as if trying to keep his size a secret. The door buzzed. Logan pulled it open, gave a nod to the camera, then continued through, grateful the delay had been a minor one. They knew his face well here. Hardly surprising. He was more regular a fixture than some of the doctors. There was a reception-style desk along the corridor behind the next door, a plexiglass shield protecting the staff member behind it. Logan stopped at the counter, set down the dog-eared folder he carried under his arm, then signed himself in.
"You're later today,"
said the woman behind the shield. She was relatively new. He'd first seen her 4, maybe 5 visits ago, so she was only a couple of months into the job. She was plump and soft-looking, and Logan doubted she'd last much longer. A quick glance at the newspaper open at the job section on the desk beside her confirmed his suspicions. He didn't blame her.
"Crazy morning,"
he replied, then briefly winced at his choice of words.
"Busy, I mean."
His eyes flicked to the clock mounted on the wall behind reception. There was a little round cage over it, securing it in place. Logan knew it was there to stop any of the residents hauling the thing off the wall, and quite literally clocking some poor bastard with it. But he liked to imagine that it was an inmate here, locked away like the rest of them. He signed his name with a blip and a squiggle, then picked up his folder.
"Is he ready?"
The receptionist nodded.
"He's ready, well as he ever is. I wouldn't expect much."
Logan grunted in response, then stepped away from the counter.
"Oh, but Chief Inspector?"
"Yes."
The receptionist mustered a worried-looking smile.
"Dr. Ramesh wants to see you before you go in."
Logan stopped, turned. "Who?"
"Mr. Logan?"
A bearded Asian man in his mid-40s leaned out of a door a little way along the corridor and made a beckoning motion that Logan very much did not approve of.
"My office, please. I'd like a word."
Ramesh was new too. Newer than the receptionist, even. Unlike her, he had an efficient, by-the-book air to him that came across as rude, but ensured he had a better chance of sticking the job than she had. He took a seat behind his desk as Logan closed the office door, then motioned to the chair opposite for the DCI to do the same.
"I'll stand, thanks."
Ramesh tutted softly, took a moment to conclude that he didn't like having such a dramatic height disadvantage, and got to his feet. The office was small, but fastidiously neat to the point it didn't look like a functioning workplace at all. Rather, it was like something IKEA might use as a showpiece for its new office range designed for the deeply unimaginative. The desk was irritatingly uncluttered, aside from a vertical stack of 6 hefty-looking medical tomes, all angled so their barely decipherable titles could be read by anyone sitting across from the doctor. Each spine was smooth and crease-free, and the carefully presented showpiece told Logan pretty much everything he needed to know about the office's current occupier.
"I'm not happy about this."
He prodded the desktop with his index finger.
"I'm not happy about this at all."
There was an accent there, but it had been smoothed over and filled in around the edges with received pronunciation. No doubt at some private boarding school down south somewhere, Logan guessed. This did not do his opinion of the man any favours.
"Not happy about what?"
"You, him, this whole thing. You shouldn't be coming in like this. It's not fair."
Logan shifted his weight, eliciting a groan from the carpeted floorboards beneath him.
"Fair!
Mr. Petrie is a patient here."
He was a few inches shorter than Logan, but was doing an admirable job of pretending not to notice. He was also doing a better job of holding the DCI's gaze than most Polis ever managed.
Mr. Petrie is a convicted killer who murdered 3 children. He's also a key witness in an ongoing investigation.
Yes, but it isn't an ongoing investigation, is it, Inspector?
His accent bubbling up.
You caught him. He stood trial.
Detective Chief Inspector.
He raised his head and straightened his shoulders, forcing the doctor to lean back a fraction to maintain eye contact.
And I'm well aware that we caught him, but he has continued to withhold vital information that will allow us to fully mark the case closed. Hence why I'm here.
Again.
He pushed his high-backed leather chair in below his desk and rested his hands on it.
I've looked back at the records. It seems you come here often.
Frequently.
Some would call that harassment.
They can call it whatever they like. Until he gives us the information we need, it's an ongoing investigation. After that, I will happily never give the bastard another thought.
He raised an index finger and leaned in a little closer.
Although I might spare a few minutes to dance in his grave.
He turned his mouth into something that was designed to resemble a smile, but wasn't quite there.
How's that sound?
Ramesh's fingers kneaded the back of his chair, as if massaging it. He inhaled slowly through his nose, either stalling for time, or building up to saying something he thought might escalate the situation further. The latter, it turned out.
I know your superintendent.
He left a pregnant pause there, giving that new nugget of information a moment to sink in.
We're in the same golf club.
Logan sniffed, shrugged, gave a shake of his head.
I wouldn't know. Always struck me as an arsehole's game. I'm more of a darts man myself.
He tilted his head forward, giving the doctor the briefest of nods.
No offence.
From the look in Ramesh's face, offence had clearly been taken. Logan wouldn't lose any sleep over it. God knew, he got little enough already.
Well, I'm going to talk to him, to Gordon, about...
Ramesh gestured vaguely in Logan's direction.
All this, it's not fair. It's not on. My predecessor may have tolerated it, but... It's not on. I'm not having it.
I will. Tell Gordy I say hello.
He held up the battered cardboard folder as if in salute.
And I'll be out of your hair just as soon as Mr. Petrie answers my questions. All right?
The doctor's fingers tightened their grip on the chair as Logan turned and opened the door.
And how is he supposed to do that, exactly? How is he supposed to do that?
Logan paused in the doorway, filling it. He narrowed his eyes, considering this, then clicked his tongue against the roof of his mouth.
I'm sure we'll figure something out.
Then he slipped out into the corridor and closed the door behind him. Logan sat in a molded plastic chair and gazed upon the face of evil. For its part, the face of evil smiled vaguely back at him, its eyes shimmering in confusion, never quite focusing all the way on the visitor. Logan wasn't buying it. He had never bought it, no matter what the doctor said. Owen Petrie, Mr. Whisper, the papers had called him back in the day. Back when he'd abducted and murdered 3 wee boys, and done his damnedest to snatch away 2 more. It was statements from the 2 close calls that had led to the nickname. They'd both mentioned his voice as he'd tried to talk them into his van. A soft, whispering rasp, and the tabloids had lapped it up. He sat in an old-fashioned, high-backed armchair now, cowed and shrunken by the size of it. Back when he'd been on the outside, he'd been a right dapper Dan, suiting and booting it whenever he was out and about, shirt, tie, the works. Now, he sat slouched in an old pair of grey joggies and an off-white t-shirt that that was threatening to drown him. Food stains dotted the front of it, varying shades of orange blemishes suggesting curry was a regular staple on the hospital menu. He hadn't shaved in days, or been shaved, Logan supposed. His stubble was a salt and pepper lavy brush, heavy on the salt. His hair had been trimmed on the left side of his head. The right side was mostly bald, the hair there never having grown back around the site of the injury that had put him in his current condition. Supposedly put him in his current condition. The room was a private one, and as drab as any of the others in the hospital. Aside from the chairs, there was a narrow bed, a narrower wardrobe, and a desk that never got used. The edges of all the furniture had been smoothed off, the corners chunky and rounded. There was a good-sized window, divided into much smaller chunks by a crisscross of sturdy spars. The bleakness of the view. The window looked directly onto another, even grimmer section of the hospital. Pleased Logan immensely. Good enough for the bastard. Too good. The little rolling hospital table that was usually positioned by the bed had been set up like a barrier between both men. A plastic jug of room temperature water sat in it, untouched. Logan lifted the jug and placed it on the desk, which, like everything else in the room, was within easy arm's reach.
Owen,
Logan began, opening his folder.
I'm told you've been bright these last few weeks. I'm hoping that means you're ready to help me.
Petrie's brow knotted. Speaking was a struggle, like he was wrestling the words from his mouth one at a time, and they were putting up a bloody good fight. The voice still had the low, throaty hiss that had earned him his nickname, and the sound of it made Logan's skin crawl.
Help you.
You know how, Owen. We've been through this.
He produced an A4 photograph from his folder and sat it on the table between them. It was a blown-up image, full colour but grainy, showing a smiling boy dressed as the Red Ranger from Power Rangers. The outfit was too big for him, the sleeves folded back to make it fit, but he didn't care. He looked proud as punch, his face upturned to the camera, his hands raised in a mock karate pose. Logan didn't need to see the picture to know any of this. It was long since burned in.
Dylan Muir, age 3.
Petrie didn't look at the photograph. Not at first. It was only when Logan wrapped his knuckles on the plastic tabletop that Petrie's eyes went to it. He smiled, not unkindly, and made a little noise that forced Logan to grip his chair to stop himself lunging for the bastard.
He looks like a nice boy.
The words were slow, laborious. Logan counted to 5 in his head before continuing.
Aye, he was nice, Owen. He was a good lad. Much loved by everyone. His pals, his sister, his parents. A great wee lad. And then he died.
A flicker of a frown crossed Petrie's face. He tapped the edge of the photograph with the tip of a finger, prodding at it, as if to check it were real.
Oh?
He said, dragging his gaze up to meet Logan's. He continued to tap the bottom of the photograph as he battled with the next few words.
What happened to him?
Logan leaned in, closing the gap between them. His voice became lower, his tone more menacing.
That's why I'm here, Owen. I was hoping that maybe you could tell me.
Petrie didn't flinch or make any attempt to draw back. Nothing flickered behind his eyes. He was good. Logan would give him that.
I don't know.
See, I think you do. No. I know you do, Owen.
He placed another 3 photographs down, Dylan Muir on the swings. Dylan Muir in at his mum's makeup, a line of lipstick smeared across his forehead. Dylan Muir with his hand buried up to the wrist in a bag of Monster Munch. Petrie watched them being set out with the concentration of a punter at a magic show, trying to figure out the trick and second guess how it was done. Logan gave him a few moments to take those images in before setting down the final photograph. This one was smaller than the rest, and the only one that wasn't in colour. It went on top of the others, slap bang in the middle. Dylan Muir, tied to a chair, tears cutting tracks down his dirty cheeks. Logan could see the boy's expression without looking. Every line, every crease, every moment of suffering etched across his features. He knew it all. Petrie lowered his head and peered at the final image, as if looking over the top of a pair of glasses. He studied it like this for a few seconds, then drew back suddenly, like he'd finally figured out what he was looking at.
I don't like that one.
No, I don't like that one either.
He fished in the folder and produced two more images. He set them down one at a time.
And I don't like that one of Lewis Briggs. Or this one of Matthew Dennison.
Petrie's gaze was aimed squarely over Logan's shoulder now, out through the window at the grey building beyond. The DCI leaned to the right, interrupting the view.
Look at them, Owen.
Petrie shook his head.
Look at their photos.
I don't want to.
Logan snatched the photographs up, one in each hand, holding them in front of Petrie.
We found Lewis. We found Matthew. Too late, aye. Far too late. But we found them. At least we could give their families that.
He set the pictures down and picked up the black and white image of Dylan Muir, holding it with almost reverential care as he gazed into the boy's wide, trusting eyes. For a while, Logan had imagined that they might find the boy alive. Somewhere. Somehow. Someday. But then, in a rare moment of lucidity, Petrie had finally confessed to his murder and shattered that dream. Just like he'd shattered so many others.
But we never found Dylan. You never let us give him back so we could give his family some sort of peace.
Petrie's mouth flapped open and closed. His eyes were glazed, and he had a look of a goldfish about him, staring out at the world from behind a wall of glass.
Cut that shit out!
He clicked his fingers up close in the other man's face. Petrie's eyelids fluttered, but he was looking through Logan now, staring at empty space.
Where is he, Petrie? Tell me what you did with him. Tell me where you left him. Tell me where to find him.
Across the table, Petrie's frown deepened, the wrinkles on his forehead furrowing into shadowy grooves. He remained like that for a good 10 seconds. Then he blinked. Once, twice, a hypnotist's patient coming out of a trance. His face relaxed. He looked at Logan and smiled vaguely, as if seeing him for the first time, but finding something familiar about him. Petrie's hand came up and idly traced the dent that had forever altered the shape of his skull, his fingertips following the line of his scar. Finally, he looked down at the spread of photographs of the smiling 3-year-old set out before him.
He looks nice.
He ran his fingers across one of the photographs and raised his eyes to meet Logan's.
Is he yours?
Logan couldn't stop himself. He lunged across the table and caught Petrie by the food-stained T-shirt. Petrie's vacant, not quite there smile remained fixed on his face. He didn't flinch. Not even when the DCI's other arm drew back, his fingers balling into a fist.
Mr. Logan!
The voice snapped Logan out of it, brought him back to his senses. He released his grip, but wasn't gentle about it. Petrie thudded back into the padding of the chair. Turning, Logan saw Dr. Ramesh holding the door open.
I think you've outstayed your welcome for one day. Mr. Petrie needs his rest.
The door squeaked as he opened it wider.
Don't make me ask you again.
Petrie's vague smile twitched as he watched Logan gather up his photographs and replace them in the folder.
I'll see you soon again, Owen,
the DCI said, a threat and a promise.
Maybe we'll jog your memory next time.
I'm sure we can arrange something through the proper channels. But for now, I'm afraid I must ask you to leave.
Tucking the folder under his arm, Logan made for the door. He stopped when he was level with the doctor, drawing himself up to his full height for maximum looming potential.
I'll be reporting this.
Good luck with that.
He was about to leave when Petrie called to him.
Sir? Excuse me? Sir?
Logan stopped, turned. The smile crept higher on Petrie's face. His voice was a whisper, the words tumbling freely from his mouth.
Say hello to the little boy for me.
This is A Litter of Bones, a DCI Jack Logan thriller, written by J.D. Kirk and produced by Bea Heer.